Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. For this week's podcast, we're going to break this down into 10 portions, but we're going to talk all about measles. And measles has kind of gained a lot of attention recently between the fact that we have pretty much one of the worst outbreaks that we've had in years and quite technically decades. And we have also noticed some weird cases where we have a cruise ship where there is a measles outbreak and some other, you know, current events type stuff, but also tying into something that I think a lot of us have actually forgotten unless we're working with these endemic populations or endemic areas. And so it's worth revisiting this so we can have a better understanding and a nice refresher as far as what measles is and what we need to know about it. So we broke that down into 10 sections today. And this was based partly with some other recent things that came up, including an Emergency Medicine Journal article, and that was published earlier this year. So we're going to break this down, like I said, into 10 portions. The first couple are going to be bigger, and then we're going to kind of narrow it down from there. So let's talk about the first thing. What's the presentation? What does measles look like? Well, cases can occur year-round, and it kind of hits its peak in March, but most of these cases occur in the spring and summer. We see it a lot more in unvaccinated people, especially travelers to endemic areas such as Africa, especially Nigeria, China, the Philippines, and the Middle East, including Yemen. We also see this in immunocompromised patients, and these are people all at higher risk. The incubation period, so the time it takes from exposure to when symptoms begin, is about 6 to 21 days, and usually it's in the first couple of weeks. The first symptoms that you'll see is a fever. It gets up to 40 degrees Celsius. For those of you like me that live in the United States and we still use the old system, that's 104 degrees Fahrenheit. And that usually happens by day 5 where we hit that temperature. Other things you'll see, conjunctivitis, cough, and coryza. Coryza is copious nasal drainage. We'll also see coplic spots, and this is pathognomonic, but it can sometimes be hard to pick this up in early infection. I've noticed that with all the cases that I really end up seeing, I see the coplic spots at some point. And so coplic spots, they usually show up on the buccal mucosa, usually opposite of the molars, but they can appear anywhere approximately 48 hours prior to the rash, and they can be anywhere in the oropharyngeal mucosa, such as the soft palate. But classically, if you're studying for boards, you'll want to know that it's going to be at the buccal mucosa opposite of the molars. The last part, the last stage of this in some ways, is this rash that shows up. It usually starts in the face, especially around the hairline or behind the ears, and it spreads from there, and it slowly goes down on the trunk. It spares the palms and soles. The rash is more billiform in appearance, and it blanches initially, but over time it quits blanching. And this rash usually resolves within a week. Now, labs usually aren't necessary, at least for the initial diagnosis, but if we were to do some lab studies early on, we'll probably see some eosinophilia and some elevated transaminases. It's important to know what this actually looks like. So on the show notes, I've included a couple of pictures, one of coplic spots, the other of the rash that we're talking about. So if you have someone who has it, you need to know about the potential complications, because despite what you may hear, the misinformation that's out there, this has very serious consequences. It's part of the reason why we focus so hard on vaccinating and preventing this illness. So complications will occur in about 30% of patients. The most common is diarrhea, coming in at 8%, but close behind at 7% is this global immunosuppression, which can lead to secondary bacterial infections. And some of these can become very deadly. The big one that we worry about is pneumonia, because this is the most common killer. And this is present in about 6% of patients. What happens a lot of times is that these people have a long, hard process of recovery. They basically just lose their immune system with measles, which is why it makes it so devastating. And yes, they may have some more mild things like otitis media and maybe some more mild cases of pneumonia, but they get exposed to things that otherwise vaccines would work for, especially Haemophilus influenza, which we've developed a vaccine for. And so this is all very devastating, but we have even more devastating things. Encephalitis occurs in about 0.1% of cases, or 1 in 1,000, and it can become very quickly a lethal process. There's acute demyelinating encephalomyelitis, which is ADEM. It also occurs at about 1 in 1,000, but it carries with it a 10 to 20% mortality rate. So basically, 1 in 10,000 children will die from this condition when they've been exposed, which is why this is one of the serious killers we need to think about just in that regard. Not even talking about the more common things they die from, which are those bacterial superimposed infections. There are even more rare things that show up, but we're finding out with newer data that this is not as rare as we originally thought, this like one in a few million type thing. And that's this subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. And unfortunately, this progressive neurological decline, it's universally fatal. So again, this is something that we want to prevent. And fortunately, there are some vaccines on that, but more about that in a moment. So let's talk about what happens when you're pregnant. So although pregnancy is not a risk factor in developing measles, it has serious complications. It has maternal and fetal risk, especially intrauterine death. So this is something that we need to keep in mind, and especially in those that are pregnant. The vaccine that we use for this really hasn't been shown to be safe. We need to think about having these people immunized ahead of time before they become pregnant, because we really have less data, less support, less safety about actually doing the vaccines while they're pregnant. So let's talk about contagiousness. So measles is very contagious, and it spreads via airborne particles, and it can still be present up to 2 hours after that person has left the room with a 90% attack rate. You may ask, well, what's a 90% attack mean? Well, that means for those who are susceptible and exposed, there's a 90% chance that you will get measles. So if you've been exposed in the same room with that person and you weren't vaccinated, 90% chance you're going to get it. And here's the really tricky part. Remember that incubation period? Well, it can spread 2 days before it really starts to incubate. And then it's 4 days after the rash has appeared. So we have this prolonged period of basically a couple of weeks at least where people can be spreading the disease. So we have to be careful about this. Now, what about how do we isolate this? Well, in the clinical setting, we need to know that it's very important to keep these people isolated. So we need to have deeper terminal cleans on these rooms, and that we should be using airborne precautions. That includes using an N95 mask, proper gown and gloves as well. But basically, we need to keep ourselves as much of a barrier as possible to protect not only ourselves, but other people around us. So, for example, when we go home and stuff like that. Confirmation-wise, originally, like I said, this is clinical. This is a clinical diagnosis initially, but there are ways to test it. The most common is that you're testing for RNA or IgGM in saliva after the rash appears. There are ways to do testing by blood, but again, there are different options. It's worth talking to your public health department to see what they recommend. And usually they're going to have something on file. It's just a matter of knowing what they want, and they'll usually be able to test it at the state level, if nothing else. The seventh point is about vitamin A. So vitamin A has proven to be a very important portion of the treatment because, again, this is a viral infection, so there's not much else we can do. But a deficiency and a lack of vitamin A supplementation has demonstrated increased mortality in children with measles. So having that vitamin A that we can give them and making sure we do the appropriate dosing is vital for survival and helping decrease the risk of mortality overall. So let's talk about the part that we really kind of, you know, hear about the most, and there's some controversy behind, and that's vaccination. So vaccination is the key to prevention. A single dose, which was basically given between 1957 and 1989, was about 90% effective. But now that they've been doing the two-dose regimen, it's nearly 100% effective. It works really well. Some people may not convert. They may need additional vaccination. That's something that you can do based on titers. But overall, you follow the CDC guidelines for this when it comes to vaccinating children and adults. And I've included a link of that in the show notes, so you can always refer to that as well. Point number nine, my most frustrating point. I hate Andrew Wakefield because he is a fraud and he is set behind everything. There is no legitimate link to autism. I cannot stress that enough. It is crap entirely. It has been disproven over and over again, and it has caused delays in how we take care of children. It has led to setbacks in vaccinations. It has led to the spread of this condition to start with populations that otherwise we could have prevented this in. And so I am very opposed to the idea of foregoing vaccinations, especially in this case where you're worried about autism when there are real threats that have been shown at much higher numbers than anything that you hear about with vaccine injury type stuff, which I won't even entertain with that right now because it's own separate conversation. But I will tell you that if you come on here with your anti-vaccine rhetoric, I will immediately delete it. I don't have time for that crap. I'm not even going to entertain it. Because anyone who's educated truly knows and truly understands that this has no legitimacy with autism. And that, like I said, Andrew Wakefield is a fraud. So now that I've stepped off that little soapbox here for a second, moving on to the last point is public health. Given how contagious this is and the many complications, this is a public health concern, especially given, again, we're noticing more people not getting this important vaccine. And so we need to know when this is going on. So it's necessary to report measles as a reportable illness to public health officials. So that's my quick 10-point version of what's going on and some quick reminders to know about. Feel free to check out some more. I've included links in the show notes to more details on some articles that you can also review as well. Oh, and just one quick last thing I wanted to add is that we have registration open for Critical Access 2019, which is August 5th through 7th in Missouri. So if you are wanting to learn more about ultrasound, check it out. It is at practicalpocus.com/criticalaccess2019. Make sure to check it out while there is still a chance to do so, because registrations are going to start filling up really quickly. And we have a couple of different options. The first option is you can bring your own ultrasound machine. And when you do that, you pay one set. And luckily for those of you who have that, you'll have more time to potentially register. There is the other option where you can buy a machine, but when you do so, when you register for the course, you will get $500 off of the actual course price while buying an ultrasound machine, just so it will make it easier for you to pull that trigger to come with us. And then third, through special deals with both GE and Butterfly Network, say you're not certain that you know what machine you actually want. Well, you have a chance to trial it and use it before you actually purchase it. There are very few of these options as far as how many times we're going to be able to offer this and how many of these machines we're going to have. So if you are on the fence, you don't have your own machine to bring, and maybe you don't have the budget yet to actually buy one ahead of time, you can do that by contacting us directly. Say, hey, I want to trial a machine. And we'll give you the special details on that. So you got to go to practicalpocus.com to do that. But make sure to do that as soon as possible, because that will not last for very long. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.